Hello and welcome to episode 523 of Contending at the Water Cooler. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I am joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Someone's got the silly giggles, so we're going to start with Megan. Megan.
I was going to say this little bitch. I don't know why you're laughing. I'm Megan McLaughlin. I'm wearing a pussy hat. And you can find me everywhere at Hey Dude Meg.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. And Joey, have you composed yourself?
No. I don't know what's happening. Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter, Joey Moser 80.
You know, before we continue, I have to interrogate this. Why are you laughing?
Yeah, because of my hat?
No, it's not because of your hat. It's because it's clear.
The pussy bonnet?
I don't know why that's making me laugh.
Because I said old pussy bonnet, Ben, Megan? Okay.
Feminism!
Okay, I'm taking it off. I'm taking it off.
No, be your authentic self, please. This is the podcast for you to be your authentic self.
No, oh my God. I was not laughing at your bonnet. I was laughing at what Clarence said.
See, I think the theme of this podcast is just men ruin it all. How about that?
That's true.
All right. Welcome to episode 523. Here we are going to talk about women. We're going to talk about the Lilith Fair and more recently the new documentary Lilith Fair: Building a Mystery, which we have all seen and all presumably loved. We'll get into some reactions to it. And it's so interesting too, because I have so many memories of that era because I am much older than both of you. So, but you were also pop
Not
culture.
That much. I was going to say.
Yeah, that's true. Like, that's true.
Yeah.
Only, you know, you guys were pop culture cognizant back then.
You
so
were
you
just
knew
adult.
What was going
you were an
on.
Adult. Yeah. You were an adult compared to us. That was it.
I have been to my share of Sheryl Crow concerts. I just have to say that. So we're going to talk about Lilith Fair and what we thought and what it made us reminisce about and what we think about the, you know, the I'm very interested in seeing, Megan, what you think about sort of the cultural impact of Lilith Fair, which is something that, you know, we'll get into this, but it's something that I don't think the documentary quite taps into as much as I wanted it to, but because I think there's a whole lot there. I think you could do a whole nother documentary just focused on the cultural impact of Lilith Fair. But anyway, we'll get into that. And of course, we'll close with flash forward to the film. Sorry, I was expecting a beam of light to shine down upon me when I say the words one battle after another. The film that we are most anticipating in the upcoming week.
Oh, we'll I just came. So sorry.
Sorry, I've elevated. The rapture has happened. Sorry, it hasn't happened yet because I haven't seen one battle after another. But anyway, we'll get into that later. So let's get started, Megan. Since you are the female representation on the podcast, why don't you tell us about Lilith Fair and Lilith Fair building a mystery?
I am the Lilith Fair expert on this podcast because I've been to all three Lilith Fairs.
I thought of you throughout this whole movie.
I figured you did, because I have things to say about you about during this movie too. But so Lilith Fair, for the noobs that don't know what this is, Lilith Fair was a festival curated or put together by Sarah McLachlan, Canadian songstress, no relation, even though I used to tell people that she and I were related.
You did.
I used to say she's my cousin, just to be an asshole. And people were like, oh, that's so cool, because we spell our name exactly the same way. I wanted to be Sarah McLachlan. But anyway, so Sarah McLachlan, you know, put together this festival of female artists because she was told that, you know, you couldn't put two women on a bill, like the same, like, concert venue, the same bill. You also couldn't play them back to back on the radio, and she was kind of pissed off, she was pissed off about that. So she started putting together this festival, and it kind of just snowballed and became, like, I remember when it was first coming out that, like, oh yeah, I want to go see this. And then it just, like, it was the hottest ticket in town that summer, in every town. But so the documentary talks about the impact of the festival and how, you know, how it came to be, all of the uphill battle that they faced, and also kind of how we're back at square one is what was a takeaway that I did not expect to realize. But that is basically the plot of it. I really enjoyed this. It took me right back to the 90s. I felt like, wow, I forgot. And also, by it's from director Ali Pankew. It did a great job of kind of like placing me right back in what that was like at the time. And also, like, I remember every girl had like spaghetti straps,
Oh, God.
like, you know, like tank tops and stuff. And I wanted to wear that, but I couldn't at the time because my boobs were too big and I just could not do it. And so I was always jealous of those girls, but seeing that, I was like taken back immediately. I was obsessed with the Lilith Fair. I'll just say that I have my Lilith Fair book. I still have the Entertainment Weekly copy, if you can see, of the iconic Lilith Fair, Entertainment Weekly. And this festival meant so much to me. And even when Clarence and I talked to Sheryl Crow a couple years ago, I think I even told her, like, you know, you were I wanted to be you. You're one of my heroes. And these women were my heroes because they were just unapologetically themselves. They were singing together. You know, I love that they would pair up on songs and stuff. And the documentary really shows you how that all came to be. It also reminded me a bit of the Behind the Music VH1. I used to watch that one all the time. They
Yes,
did on that.
yes.
And it reminded me a bit of that because I knew some of the things that, like, oh yeah, I remember seeing that before. But they also offered, you know, almost a 30-year looking back on this that I thought was really interesting. There's so much that I want to say about this, but I've talked too much already. What did you guys think of this? I absolutely loved it.
I thought it was great. I mean, a music documentary. I mean, it's got such great music. It's such a fantastic time capsule of these artists at, and I don't want to say the artists at their peak because they've continued to make music, but these artists at their most prominent, in that era. And I love that quote. There's, I'm going to paraphrase, but Sarah McLachlan said one of the justifications for kicking off Lilith Fair or the gestation of Lilith Fair was that she was on the road and she was so lonely. Being on the road and isolated because, women just kind of toured by themselves. They didn't have any kind of camaraderie in the music industry, actively pushed them away, pushed them aside, segmented them in individual sort of classifications because that's how they viewed them. And she said, you know what? Let's get together. Let's get Paula Cole together. Let's get Sheryl Crow together. Let's get Erykah Badu. Let's get, Tracy Chapman, and just and they built this community, and I just love seeing the backstage footage of them just being people, and it wasn't, and it was very obvious that it wasn't. There was no hierarchy there. There was no, I'm Sheryl Crow, I'm Sarah McLachlan, we're Grammy winners, so you stay away from us. We're going to be over here in our own little trailer. They were just hanging out and talking to other women and other artists, and I thought that was. That was really fantastic. And the thing that surprised me the most, and that this is the last thing I'll say, and I'll turn it over to you, Joey, was I was shocked when I think it's Olivia Rodrigo who says, oh, I'd never heard of the Lilith Fair. And I was like, what?
Know.
I was like, how could you have, like, and it's very evident that people just hadn't heard of it at all. People still don't, this is a revelation to people that this ever existed. And for us growing up in that era, it was everything. It was everywhere. It was huge. It was praised. It was criticized. It was everything. I mean, it was such a pop culture moment for the latter 3 years of the 1990s that it was inescapable. And I find it so bizarre that people just have lost that.
I do want to say though that I was excited that she knew who Sarah McLachlan was because she's Canadian, right? Is Olivia Rodrigo Canadian? I
I
can't
do not
remember.
know.
Okay. Well, I was excited that she knew who Sheryl, like that she knew those artists, because I think so many people today don't know who those artists are. So that at least made me happy, but I was surprised that, like, wow, nobody, I guess nobody would know what that is. And that's
That's so
sad to
depressing.
me. Yeah, go ahead, Joey. I'm sorry.
Olivia Rodrigo was born in California, so no.
Not Canadian. Okay.
If she was Canadian, she probably would have known about Lilith Fair. I first of all, I could have watched like 3 more hours of this movie. Like it was so it's only like 1 hour and 39 minutes, so I could have watched more. Very rare for me to say that I would like more of something. The whole way that they showed how men very publicly criticized women's music and how they it made me very angry a lot of the time, maybe because when during that time period I wasn't paying attention to what shock jocks were doing, and it was very maddening to me, and sort of the how multiple people throughout the movie, like one of you said, how they well we can't play one woman behind another woman. I was like, that is the stupidest fucking thing I have ever heard. And I had forgotten, like, the music of this time period, it was really freaky because I watched it at work, and it was sort of like I was like just in my chair, just like I don't know, like it was just like song after song after song. Like I listened to Where Have All the Cowboys Gone like 12 times today because of this movie, and it's just so weird how those movies just really like lodge into your brain and stay there. And I listened to that song in forever. Joan Osborne, I listened to a bunch of her today, and it was just
She's
like,
incredible. I love Joan.
yeah,
And
she's awesome.
Liz Phair. I mean, oh my God, I just
My
why can't I
goddess.
was like re you know racking through my head.
What about, but that
Yeah.
was even before Why Can't I? This was like Exile
Yeah.
to Guyville.
Yeah,
This
right.
was like, sorry, this is where I get nerd out on Liz Phair because she's my everything.
Yeah, it was just like, I don't know, I think it did a really good job as to show why not necessarily like the camaraderie is fantastic and all these women, because this is an age before YouTube and social media, that these women like found each other and appreciated each other's work, but it wasn't just because they wanted to do it, it was a real necessity for them. And it's sort of like, just think about how like female artists, if they didn't have this, like what the state of that would have been. Like I felt like I feel like this festival is responsible for so much music that I listened to when I was like, oh God, 1998, I was what, 15, 14, 15, December baby. So it's just like 14, 15, 16. Hearing it all like mashed together was really kind of like it was like a time machine, but it was just it was really weird hearing everything all after each other. I loved it. I think it's really good.
I kept thinking too, I'm like, why didn't Joey go with me to the Lilith Fair? And then I realized you weren't out of the closet.
He was little Dan Levy.
Like, I can't go to Lilith Fair.
was like, why didn't this bitch go to Lilith Fair with me? Like,
That's girl music.
yeah.
I'm in.
You were still straight and
Yeah,
dating
I
your
was. He
legend
was
age.
lining up to go to Woodstock 99.
Oh. Which, by
Which.
the way, I don't feel like I knew about. Like, I remember Woodstock 99, but I don't re think I had heard like how disgusting it was. Or if I
Yeah.
did, I didn't
Sorry, I
remember.
was not.
Yeah,
I
well,
mean,
I
I
mean,
remember it being a big deal.
yeah, it was, but I think, the sort of the undertone of that segment of the documentary, which it does talk about the end of the first 3 years of Lilith Fair and Woodstock 99, and Lilith Fair was like, just a celebration of music and femalehood and sisterhood and community, and men were invited too. And then it was Woodstock 99, we hate women. We raped
And try not to get
four women
sexually
were
assaulted.
yes, exactly. And it
Yes.
was but it wasn't interrogated for that. It was only like, you know, they showed the news clips, and the only thing that was really sort of negatively reported was that four women were potentially assaulted. And I'm sure it was like, you know, and then to look at the gobs of PR and negative PR and criticisms of Lilith Fair, that was just, you know, assaulted. They were assaulted by the media for just getting together, you know. Oh, you know, you can't have Planned Parenthood there in Texas because of, you know, they wanted to give out condoms, or why didn't you have enough diversity? You know, even back then, they were just, you know, they were just women trying to get together and do something that had never been done before against all odds. And then they were criticized for not having enough diversity. They were criticized for everything they did. And Woodstock 99 looked like a trash fest that ended in massive bonfires. And, you know, it's fine.
I remember the diversity conversation too. And I remember thinking, oh, like, well, I think the problem with the first, like, this wasn't a problem, but like, I think the reason why it wasn't as diverse, even though it had, like, you know, Tracy Chapman and they actually had a lot of different artists. I remember that first year, but I think the problem was they were a specific, like, singer songwriter type. They were doing the, like, you know, the Tracy Chapman type of music, which there aren't, it is not as diverse in that group. So when they opened it up to, like, I remember I saw Queen Latifah, I saw the Dixie, the Chicks, now the Chicks. I saw them. I remember being like, I don't know if I want to see rap. I mean, this is before I got into hip hop and stuff, but I was like, I don't know. But like, I remember it being cool. My mom really loved Queen Latifah. She was like, that was like my favorite. Like, she really loved that one. So I think it's interesting that, like, that Sarah took that feedback too and wasn't like defensive about it. Like, sure, yeah, we've made mistakes. Like, the most Canadian responses throughout everything, like everything she faced, she was like, sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Like, I love we did that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I could have done better with that. But I also think that, like, it wasn't fair for them to be so hard on them in that first year. One, because they didn't know what it was going to be. And two, because they were kind of in a niche of singer songwriter, which tends to be less diverse, I guess, but even though they were still diverse by having people like Tracy Chapman was probably one of the biggest artists in that group, so I felt like they were still nice about, even with their own, you know, taking that constructive feedback, they were great about it. Which, watching the Woodstock stuff, you know, Kid Rock saying,
Monica Lewinsky's a pig.
Oh,
yeah.
I was like, oh wow, right. I forgot that's like that was the time period. Or fucking Fred Durst. You know.
Fred Durst of all
being
people.
A complete dirtbag.
Yeah. Like, dirtbag. This documentary is not about that moment in time, but it would be so interesting to see if there is a connection from that Woodstock 99 Limp Bizkit era to modern middle-aged white male angst. Like, if there's, you know, because it seems like that 90, that Woodstock 99 footage seems so prescient of modern culture and modern anger within the white male community.
Those guys, kids.
Yeah. They grew up and they became
up schools. I'm sorry, can I say that? Like, that's what those guys, kids are doing now.
What? They could be what?
They're all angry white males. Like, those,
oh, yeah.
The guys who attended that, their kids, their sons are now angry white males who are.
But, like, if you think about just thinking about, like, Woodstock 99 and who played there, and then it's so unbelievably, glaringly obvious, like, the people who play there, like your Kid Rocks, like your Limp Bizkits, you know, their music has not stood the test of time, like an ounce of what any of this other music, like your Paula Coles, your Bonnie Raitt, your, you know, the different women who are at different points of their career. I mean, the way that Sarah McLachlan was really ushering in new talent, especially, you know, to just give them a platform to sing. Like, I didn't, I forgot that
Christina Aguilera performed at Lilith Fair.
I and saw it was, her.
Oh,
I
that's saw her. Crazy. And
before
it's just
she was
sort of
big.
Like, and it was just like, I don't know. It's just the disparity between those two things is so like the a chasm in between them. And it's just like, sure, one ended in what looked like poop filled mudslides and stuff, but like I remember people criticizing Lilith Fair a lot. Like I remember like the clip they showed of Will and Grace. I remember, you know, all the press about it. There's a weird, like, I'm sure someone has written something about it, like the sort of aggressive, emboldened, loud correlation of misogyny after Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, like how that is, it feels much more aggressive looking back at it now that we're in this era of misogyny and bullshit and crap. I'm going off on a tangent, but you know, it's really, really weird to see how specific that kind of misogyny and craziness was at that time period. And like those press conferences when they were saying, oh, it's Vulvapalooza. And I was like, someone set them on fire. Like,
and they were like presenting a view of it that didn't exist. Like they were acting like they were all man-hating women when they weren't. Like they were actually pretty peaceful and just wanting to sing. And like they and like the representations were like, I am woman, hear me roar, and I have like hairy pits. And that was kind of not what the vibe was at all. So they didn't even, they weren't even, I like how the one guy was like, they didn't even go. Like they didn't, like the people who like who were throwing stones at this didn't even go. Like they didn't even attend.
And I think one of the most insightful things that is said in this documentary talks about, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but it talks about, you know, the earnestness of Lilith Fair and how it gets attacked for that. The sincerity. Yes, that's exactly what it was. It was
Jewel
the sincerity.
Talked about that. Yeah.
And I think that that is so true because people are uncomfortable with things that aren't angry and aggressive. That's, they're much more, especially today, they're much more, yes, exactly. They're much more comfortable, you know, to put up an armor and a defense that is sarcasm, that is aggressive, that is angry, versus it's so much harder to be sincere, to be open, just to be there for, you know, I don't want to be cheesy, but to be there for love of music. It's so much more easy to put a sinister, sarcastic, nasty pallor over it.
Yeah, I agree. I also liked what they just said about the Indigo Girls, because that was so true of the time when they started talking about how the Indigo Girls, because I saw them too. I like saw all of these artists. But I remember being like, as a 13-year-old girl, being like, oh, if I listen to the Indigo Girls, does that make me gay? Like, you know, like there was, and the fact that they talked about, even though the Indigo Girls were like, oh, we were the gay girls on the tour, and we kind of came in and were like, hey, like we're here to fuck shit up in that, like, in a cool way, but that they were worried about like being seen as, you know, the gay women on the tour, and they were worried about being making them uncomfortable and stuff. And I thought that's, this was such an important moment for me as a growing up, because it's like, one, introduced me to LGBTQ people and showed me that, you know, there's, what is there to be afraid of when you're 12 or 13? I don't know, like I never felt uncomfortable there. I wish I could go back and understand that feeling of safety, because I didn't understand at the time, because I was with my mother and I was always felt safe with her. But I'm sure now, looking back on it, being in unsafe places and going there would feel completely different. But I thought that what an important moment in the LGBTQ like history of these women who are able to all come together, and men too, but like mostly like lesbian women who are able to like see the Indigo Girls, be there with their girlfriends and feel in a safe space. And like, what an important thing. And something I never thought about, but I really loved that the documentary talked about that.
Agreed. What other things?
I also wanted to say, one other thing I wanted to say. I love that the festival introduced me to so many amazing artists that I listened to. Like, do you remember Bic Runga? Like, does anybody remember? She sang Sway. It was on the American Pie soundtrack. And I remember being like, Bic Runga was at Lilith Fair. And like Chantel Kreviazuk, another Canadian songstress that I loved. I saw Letters to Cleo at one of the shows. There were so many artists. Dana Manning, that was another one that I really loved, that I like found because of Lilith Fair and introduced me to their music. Like even Bonnie Raitt was, you know, somebody I liked, but I didn't really listen to her. Emmylou Harris, like, there were just so many artists. Stana Hoffs, like I loved her from the Bangles, but then I like grew to love her from, you know, she was at the Lilith Fair. I loved hearing about Chrissy Hynde too, and how she was like reluctant to do it, which makes sense coming from where she came from. But I love that she like, you know, talked about how she felt and why she changed her mind. And I thought that was a great section too. But like all of the artists that this festival introduced me to, I will always be in debt to Sarah for that. And just love that. Indebted.
Gotta get Sarah McLachlan on the pod, man.
I know. Oh my God. I'm like, if they do documentary interviews, I want to talk to her.
Yeah. They were supposed to do there was a premiere for this in Sunday night. Yeah. They were supposed to do a concert, but they backed out of it because of the censorship, Jimmy Kimmel issue ongoing.
Yes. Which is so them to still take a stand and still.
Yeah. Well, taking the stand that they didn't feel comfortable in taking at the Grammys 30 years ago, right. 25
that
years
was
ago.
So
that was insane.
That was so interesting.
Talk about what that moment was.
So in the documentary, they were presenting the Song of the Year category. I think Record of the Year, maybe, or like, and so three Lilith Fair performers were nominated. It was Paula Cole, Sarah McLachlan, and Sean Colvin. And also, I think Hanson and who was the other one? Was like,
R. Kelly. R. Kelly was one, I think.
Hanson and R. Kelly got to perform by themselves, but they lumped in the three women together and they performed. And I guess that they were obviously upset that they had to kind of be lumped together, but they didn't protest it because they were just kind of like most women are, oh, well, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
And they kind of regret it. You can see in the doc, but I thought that was really interesting. It was something that I didn't remember.
Yes, but now they're taking a stand now, you know, that they have, you know, they were just so happy to be at the table, to quote the poet Mike White. So one thing that, go ahead.
I was gonna, even it was great to see like how the older artists or like this more seasoned artist influenced like Emmylou Harris telling Sarah, like, hey, no, you don't have to let men into this if you don't want to. You can stick to your guns and be like, this is a female led thing. I liked seeing that like collaboration and influence on them. I thought that was really interesting too.
One of the things that I, as we get to the end of the documentary, one of the things that I thought that the documentary would do was to talk a little bit more about women performing today. And they do close very abruptly, but they kind of say, which you alluded to in your introduction, there's, you know, we're at square one. There's so much work more to be done. And I would love to hear what Sarah McLachlan thinks about the recent statistics, where if you look at the top 10 songs on the Billboard charts, several times last year, they were all women. Like, and it kept happening again and again and again. Couple of times it was all Taylor Swift, or it was all a single woman. If I went back and looked at the top selling albums from the 2020s and the 2010s, there were only four people that had a top selling album in that decade and in the 5 years of 2020 thus far. Two of them were women, two of them were men. Eminem, 2010, Justin Timberlake, 2013, Adele was the top seller in 2011, 2012, 2015, 2016, and 2021. And then The Greatest Showman was the top selling album in 2018. Everything else was Taylor Swift.
Wow.
Something like, you look at something like the Eras Tour, and the documentary does show the Eras Tour. It does show other, you know, more current artists. I'm interested to see given the power of female artists today, I mean, if I turn on the radio, it is back to back women, you know, constantly. Sabrina Carpenter, Gracie Abrams, you know, Taylor Swift. It's you know, all on the radio back to back. I would love for her to comment on that, because I feel like she's saying there's work to be done, but then those artists are doing very well. Is it that it's not the singer-songwriter type of artist? You know, I'm just curious as to where she sees that disconnect. Is it just because it's only one type of artist? It's just one industry, basically, that it's Taylor Swift or and those that are within her wake, you know. I'm just very curious about that. And what do you think about it?
I thought the same thing too, because I also think that if you don't have Lilith Fair, I feel like Sarah McLachlan should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for this impact of this festival, to be honest. And also because she's a great artist, period. But like the impact of this festival, I don't think you would have a Taylor Swift Eras tour without Lilith
Fair.
Totally
agree.
I don't think you'd have Beyonce's, like, because I think Lilith Fair showed, like, promoters that women would come together to support other women. And like, and even thinking about Taylor Swift inviting like Ice Spice on stage and, you know, sharing the stage with other women. And, you know, she usually does have like a female artist that opens for her, doesn't she? I mean, so then that would be on her.
Yeah, it was by far, on the Eras tour, by far mostly women. I mean, she did have Beds and Boone once, but it was, you know, oh God, what's that? It was Phoebe Bridgers. It was Gracie Abrams. It was who's the other group? The group that's led by females. They
Haim?
No.
Haim?
Haim did perform in L.A. I think. No, I'm thinking of it starts with a P, and I can't remember. Paramore? Something like that. Anyway, she had predominantly female leads.
And I think that's even like shows an impact that, like, I think the problem now is that almost like we're the women artists are so big that they can only do, like, you're not going to see Beyonce and Taylor Swift together on a tour. Whereas,
right.
Which is okay, but at the time, like Sarah McLachlan and Sheryl Crow doing a tour together, it's like not that they're the same as Beyonce and Taylor Swift, but that's pretty crazy for them to be on the same, like the headliner, Natalie Merchant, like those were huge artists of the time. Jewel, like even thinking about that, the fact that Jewel was like on the radio constantly, Sheryl Crow, like, they're all kind of siloed now, I feel like, that you have to have, Taylor Swift has to have her own thing. Beyonce has to have her own thing. Rita Carpenter has to have her own thing. I think that's like the major difference that I would have liked to have seen them talk a bit about that, like, and that's okay, but it's, and maybe that's what Lilith Fair was working towards, was having these women have their own, like, huge, like, almost corporations. I mean, look at Taylor Swift, but like, I guess losing that camaraderie, that woman, that like, that's, it was such a special moment. And I think that's kind of what the loss is that, that they're back to being siloed, but they're huge, like, but they're back to being lonely on the tour bus, maybe.
Right. And Lilith Fair allowed or, you know, helped ushered in these predominant female artists like Adele, like Taylor Swift, like Beyonce, like Lady Gaga. But maybe Sarah McLachlan thinks, and again, I'm putting words in her mouth, but maybe she thinks they have sucked up all the air out of the room and they're not leaving, you know, space for others to grow.
I know. I would have been interested in that too. I thought of that too.
But I guess it goes to your point, Joey, that I would have watched a 3+ hour version of this document because there's so much more that you could cover.
Yeah. I mean, this could have been like a 4-part docuseries, and I would have gobbled that up. It was just so...
Absolutely. Like, how many more Beatles 4-part docuseries do we need?
Right. You
know? 27.
David's not going to be happy if he hears that.
I know. I was going to say, send your letters to Joey Moser.
Other thoughts?
Oh, it just took me back. I loved it. I forgot
it was so, how old I was. I know it was a documentary, but it was so like, it's sort of okay. You know that feeling like when you watch something that's like fiction and it does like a really good job of like capturing the era of like when you like grew up and stuff, like a fit, like so like Megan and I graduated high school in 2002. So like I know the sort of difference of what like, you know, 2002 looks like. And I just thought that this, even though obviously again it's a documentary, but it did a really good job, I think, of like placing you in the time period to understand like why something like this was needed. And I just thought that it was so like surreal to see some of this. I don't know, some of the performances. I was like, oh my god, I haven't listened to some of this music in so like Sean Colvin, another one that I was just like, oh my god, why haven't I listened to you in 10 years? Yeah. What's wrong with
Sean
me?
Sean Colvin, Natalie Merchant. I mean, oh my god,
Natalie Merchant. Ah,
10,000 Maniacs. Like, I mean, like, and her post career.
Even like, I listened to like some Sinead O'Connor today, and it was just like, I don't know, like hearing what did her and Sarah McLachlan sing?
Angel.
Angel.
It was just, I don't know, just seeing the kind of pure artistry of them singing together. Like, God, that was just so crazy.
That was the most powerful moment in the documentary for me, was when they talked about their adoration and their awe of Sinead O'Connor. And when Sinead O'Connor was singing that song, Fire, when she was just...
Fire of Babylon.
Yeah, her vocals were tremendous. And, you know, just... You know, and it just you go back to the Sinead O'Connor ripping up the post on Saturday, the Pope's picture on Saturday Night Live, and you just think about all of the shit that this woman went through, just to speaking her opinion, speaking her voice, and then you look at men who do the same thing today, and they're, you know, idolized for it. So I don't know. Anyway,
idolized, like, elected,
or like. Or all the jokes Paula Cole got for her Harry Pitts. I do remember that being.
That is like, oh,
yeah.
But the older I get, the more I really dislike Jay Leno.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And like, it was all the male comedians who were doing. But then I also remember, though, do you remember when Julia Roberts had Harry Pitts at like a premiere and like a few years later and nobody cared? So maybe Paula Cole just ushered in that. But that was so silly. But I do remember it being a thing. But I remember every body hair of a woman in the 90s, like from Marsha Cross. Wait, was it Marsha Cross?
Yeah.
Wait, who's the one who...
No, Marsha, not Marsha Cross. You're talking about Marsha...
That's from Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, no, you're talking about Marsha from the OJ trial, her perm that she got. Yeah.
Yes. Why can't Marcia, I think of her last name?
Yeah, I can't either. Anyway. We know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Sarah Paulson played her in American Crime Story and won an Emmy for it.
Body hair. Like, I just feel like everything was picked apart. And like, and they said something too at one point about like women wanting to be taken seriously. Like, I think it was Jewel that was like, I didn't want people. Oh no, it was Suzanne Vega who talked about how like she wore baggy clothes because she wanted to be taken seriously as an artist. She didn't want people looking at her. And that's how I always felt growing up. I was like, oh, I always wore baggy clothes because I wanted to be taken seriously. I didn't want people, because I knew how much scrutiny there was on women's bodies in the 90s, and I did not want that on me. And so that's why I wore baggy clothes. I was like, Suzanne Vega, God, I love you. Like
Marsha Clark.
Marsha Clark. And it was a C.
Yeah.
All right.
Marsha Gay Harden?
Surprise Oscar winner, Marsha Gay Harden.
What a thrill.
So you can watch the documentary on Hulu currently. It was on ABC, I think, earlier this week, but it is now available on Hulu. So we do highly recommend that you stream it in case you're looking for something to watch this weekend.
Yes.
All right. Let's jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Megan, please go first.
Oh, are you sure? I was going to say, Joey can go first since he didn't go last time, but I'll go first. I'll jump in. I do want to see One Battle After Another, but I forgot that it was coming out this week.
You haven't been on Twitter, have you?
I mean, I have, but, I guess I've not been paying attention enough, but, I do want to see that. I'm reading the book Summer Skate by Sean Avery, hockey player Sean Avery, and Lauren Cohen, which actually I've been enjoying that. And then I guess that's about it. Probably just catching up on anything else TV wise that comes up. I need to see Task. So that's something. That's about it.
Joey, what about you?
Nice. I am English teacher comes out in 2 days. I've seen the first three. They're fun. I was a little, honestly, I was a little worried about it because I did not think that trailer was good. There, I said it. We're all thinking, no one's thinking that. And then I was watching The Savant
Ooh.
on Apple, but I did not really well, it was supposed to come out on Friday, but I just read that Apple is postponing it following the Charlie Kirk assassination. Because it's about like Jessica Chastain plays an investigator who she like goes into, she tries to like infiltrate hate groups in order to stop like domestic violence before it happens. So she like tracks like social media and all this stuff. I did not realize that they were postponing it. It was supposed to come out on Friday. It's really emotional. I only watched one episode, but I'm into watching that. I gotta see what, I don't think they even announced when that is coming back. So I guess happier stuff. English teacher comes out. First three episodes drop on Thursday, and they drop two episodes a week after that.
Very good. I too am looking forward to one battle after another. And Megan, the reason
Ah, sorry.
oh, sorry. I fully expect to be raptured after I see it, so forgive me. This may be the last time that we talk.
Next time you join us, we'll just be Sheryl Crow's background. We'll
It's
see.
just an empty chair. It's like, hi, we're
Which, by the way,
honoring.
would be very appropriate because this is a screenshot from her video of Redemption Day, one of her very best songs.
I love that song.
It's
Oh my God.
her first three albums are flawless.
Yes,
Flawless,
yes,
flawless works of art. The Tuesday
yes.
Night Music Club, Sheryl Crow, and
Globe sessions.
Globe Sessions. Anyway, the reason that Joey and I were reacting that way is because we have started to send each other screenshots of tweets from ex-critic who has said One Battle Left Another is the greatest film of the 21st century. Repeatedly, over and over and over, it is Paul Thomas. No longer can you say it is Paul Thomas Anderson's best film. You can no longer say that it's the best film of the year. You have to now proclaim it the best film to have ever been filmed. Well, there we go,
Blow me
Lilith.
away.
Yes.
Oh, I
So anyway,
love that.
we love Lilith. I'm very anxious to see that film, but I am going out of town. I am going on my yearly pilgrimage to Orlando, Florida, where I will join in the festivities of Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios. So this time
Yay.
tomorrow night, I will be touring
Screaming.
Five Nights at Freddy's house. I will be touring a oh God, they're doing a house on, I've forgotten all of them now. They're doing one on Terrifier, which is apparently super gory, and people have thrown up. So I'm a little bit nervous about that. There's
You
a bunch
have
of
to do
things.
that. You have to report back. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I definitely will go through it once. I may not do it multiple times, but I
I
usually
heard
do.
in the tariff I heard in Terrifier 3, someone gets a chainsaw shoved up their ass.
I think I did
Probably.
hear that too. And they get like sawed in half, right? Like,
I would hope if I had a chainsaw shoved up my ass that I would just get split in half, so.
Oh, there's a Fallout house.
that's fun.
So, and there's a couple of other, oh, there's a Jason Voorhees house. So,
You know,
yeah.
I actually imagine that if you go through the Fallout house, that you're just going to be marveling at the production design of that.
I probably will. Well, that is my secret favorite thing about this is that everything looks like you're walking onto a movie set, and it's just like it's tremendous. It's fantastic. It's fun. So I will be doing that. So that is pretty much what I'm going to be doing. I have been watching Halloween Baking Championship. There is one person on there who so badly needs to get kicked off before I throw something at my TV. Other than that, it's really fun. Although I wonder what you think, Joey. Is this the first year that they've done 2 hours? Each episode is 2 hours.
They're each 2 hours. Well, they changed the format because they used to do two bakes and they just eliminate someone. And now it took me a while it was like, oh, they're going to watch each other bake. And now there's basically like a pressure test to get eliminated. I miss the judges being in costumes for longer periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
I actually felt kind of bad when we were just watching it before I came up. I had to finish the episode still, but I looked over and I was like, I don't think I like any of these people this year.
There are people who are obviously very talented, and there are people who are obviously have no business being in that competition.
There's one contestant, Megan, who literally has an anxiety attack like every 5 minutes, and she's like talking herself up, and she's just like, let's get it. You're an adult. You can do this. And I was like, please go away.
Did you get to the part of this episode where she's walking around holding the jar just like a baby? She's just walking around the kitchen holding a jar trying to figure out.
I'm worried about her mental health. Like, I think she's annoying, but I'm also just legitimately worried about her mental health.
I need her. That is the person that I need to be kicked off the show because.
She looks like a Muppet Babies version of Kristen Chenoweth. And that's saying a lot.
Yeah. Anyway. And I finished Incidents Around the House, which is going to be a Blumhouse film, which has been postponed from the spring of next year to the fall, called Other Mommy. But it is a very, 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 very dark ending. So I wonder, I would be very surprised if they carry that ending out. So does that cover it?
Yeah.
Right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3Ms, the contending co-founders, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on your favorite podcast app or here on YouTube. Click like and subscribe. Can't believe I'm saying that. And wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.